Hi, this is Emily with your Politics in Action report on CJMQ 88.9 FM. Bishop's University has let its own community know that Bishop's Dean, Michael Goldblum, has been appointed chair of the board of directors of CBC Radio Canada. This position entails guiding the board of directors, as well as the CEO in matters concerning CBC. Essentially, the responsibility of CBC's board of directors is to oversee the operations of the corporation. The appointment was recommended by Minister of Canadian Heritage, Melanie Joly, by which Goldblum will be serving a 5-year term. Crown corporations, as such, directly report through ministers, which is why, once Rep's 5-year terms are up, Joly was responsible to fill in these positions. Goldblum was qualified to assume this role having been an editor at the Montreal Gazette, publisher of the Gazette, deputy publisher at the Toronto Star, as well as many other accomplishments, including being appointed to the Order of Canada for establishing civic organizations and bridging the English and French communities together. CBC is a crown corporation influencing everyday lives of Canadians. Goldblum and his accomplishments align with CBC's interests. Goldblum definitely has demonstrated some leadership roles, which makes him the suitable candidate for the position. I'm confident Goldblum can accomplish more things in his new role at CBC. Bishops is proud to have Goldblum as dean and has made this very clear in announcing his many accomplishments. It has been 5 years since the train derailment that devastated Lac-Mégantic. Headlines had surfaced indicating that Montreal, Maine, and Atlantic Railway will not proceed to court on criminal negligence charges. It was announced by Crown officials of Quebec, as there is less of a likelihood of acquiring a guilty verdict against an already bankrupt company. Sometimes, reparations don't always come in the form of monetary compensation, but rather in the form of future prevention. The damage is done. The reputation of the company has been tarnished. The railway company has since filed for bankruptcy, and residents of Lac-Mégantic can have peace of mind. The railway company will never pass through their town again. To clarify, MMA Railway is no longer operating in Canada. It was ordered to cease operations in Canada following the disaster. The main reason was because of systematic barriers to operating in Canada, which essentially was the insurance policy expiring, as well as reparations that were assumed the railway company could not cover. The underlying incentive was for Canada to rid of MMA from functioning in the country, as the accident was at the fault of the company. Canada would want to ensure that this accident would never occur again and harm more of its citizens. Despite the fact that reparations could be costly, it was likely at the hand of Canada to revoke the insurance policy. So essentially saying, you did wrong and you're done operating here. When you think about it, bringing an already broken company to court does not make any sense. The company no longer has anything, no assets, and it doesn't even exist. If anything, MMA has already paid the price for its mistake. When you think about it, can a company really recover from a disaster? My thoughts remain pessimistic. In other words, no. One example being Maple Leaf. Do Canadians really trust buying Maple Leaf products after the Listeria poisoning outbreak? The philosophy is, if it happened once, it could happen again. Like the company's tragic end, the Lac-Mégantic case can finally be put to rest. Canada and Lac-Mégantic alike can focus on healing and reparations. A topic of provincial debate is regarding provincial law enforcers in questioning to wear or to not wear turbans and hijabs. Much controversy has arisen since the PQ's presentation of Bill 60, a charter clarifying values of state secularism and religious neutrality, bringing issues like this to the forefront of Quebec society. A Montreal City Councillor for Snowdon, Marvin Rotrand, has expressed his support for officers to support turbans and hijabs in respecting their religions. Montreal's mayor, Valerie Plante, has also expressed her support for this initiative, mainly because Montreal is a multicultural city, and it's relevant to respect that. Supporters have argued that other cities across Canada have permitted this, and it's logical for Montreal to do the same. It also makes sense, given Montreal is Canada's second largest city, and it would set an example of respecting multiculturalism if it is allowed officers to be representative of the people. So does it really matter what police officers are wearing, aside from uniforms? Not really, considering officers are bound by contract to serve and protect communities. But some people feel intimidated by this. So there is a bit of a dilemma in terms of officers being protective, yet being feared. Yet studies have indicated that officers wearing a turban or a hijab does not hinder their performance and duties as officers of the law. Even after the 2015 federal election campaign, this is a debate that Quebec cannot let go. And this is due to, as I have said before, the quiet revolution, and Quebecers do not generally support demonstrating one's religion in public. So this is an issue that will never be resolved, will always be a concern, and relevance in the province of Quebec. This is even more so in the case of homogeneous areas of Quebec that are not often exposed to different cultures and religions. Work is work no matter who puts the effort into it. Part of being an inclusive society is acknowledging the efforts of many Canadians who have supported and dedicated their own lives into making Canada a better place. This is why politicians have supported this, and I firmly believe that Quebec officers will be granted this exception of wearing turbans and hijabs while on duty. Bill C-60 still continues to yield much criticism, and this is another example of that. The Quebec government has announced a new regulation relative to welfare recipients. Commencing the 1st of April, and no, this is not an April Fool's joke, Quebec citizens on welfare must either search for a job, undergo job training, and or develop social skills. If this request is not met by the satisfaction of the Quebec government, they will revoke a portion of their monthly allowance. According to CTV, the monthly allowance is roughly $648 monthly per person. If welfare recipients fulfill the above requirements, they will receive an extra $165 monthly. If they fail to do any of the above tasks, they will have a pay cut of $224. So there is an incentive to simply join a club or even acquire training for first aid, for example. An anti-poverty group has expressed its concerns in regards to this new regulation, citing that this is a forced obligation and there should not be any monetary penalty. I disagree with this statement, not that I have anything against welfare recipients, as I don't, but it is the basic rule in business that people are more likely to respond to incentives. For instance, you offer a worker a pay raise, and this will incentivize them to do a better job at work. The same rule is the case for the Quebec government, because they do not want to enact a policy that does not actually do anything, and people won't actually do anything without an incentive. The anti-party coalition has also raised concerns over the fact that welfare recipients already have little to survive on, and making pay cuts will make the situation worse. Again, that will be the choice of the welfare recipient. They can either receive an increase by doing something productive in society, or accept that their checks will be cut. I do understand some situations are understandable, such as those who cannot physically work. For instance, I have a family member who is paralyzed on their left side and therefore cannot work. However, this is not stopping my relative in wanting to find a purpose in society. They are looking into volunteering at a local animal shelter. I think this relative of mine sets an example for other people, because if my relative can do it, and they are half paralyzed, so can able-bodied people. Let's not misinterpret this policy, because I believe its main purpose is to incentivize more people to actively participate in the workforce, particularly those who are abusing the system and are in perfect capacity to work. In other words, weeding out the free riders of our society. This is increasingly a concern, given that we have an aging population that will need to be replaced at some point in time. This cannot occur if people are checking out of the workforce. There is stigma in terms of people with mental health that is assumed if you are diagnosed with mental health disorder that you cannot work. One of my friends in psychology would probably likely agree with me. I don't think this is always the case, and this is not to offend anyone. Rather, people should realize their capabilities rather than feel stuck and useless in society. For instance, I once had a family member who ran their own business with a diagnosis of bipolar. I think it is healthy to have some community involvement, considering much of the welfare recipients use it as an excuse to stay at home all the time. It's healthy to get out and socialize in the community rather than sit at home and not feel any worth. I don't see this policy as necessarily negative. I think it's not only looking to rid of Quebec free riders, but as well as to help improve the well-being of Quebecers in terms of health. What is important to note also is that the Quebec government isn't simply enacting this policy and saying, there you go, do what you can, otherwise you are doomed. No, the Quebec government is ensuring the welfare recipients can meet with a representative of Emploi Quebec who can help ease them into the workforce. Therefore, this policy does not come without services and assistance. I wouldn't look at this policy in the negative light, but rather as the Quebec government's attempt to encourage people to earn more money by getting a job. Essentially, I believe the Quebec government is attempting to make the poor less poor rather than worse off. Taking the news to Parliament Hill, NDP MPs are motioning for Pope Francis to apologize for the abuses endured by Indigenous peoples through residential schools. NDP MPs have called on Prime Minister Justin Trudeau to support this motion and join the NDP in urging the Pope to provide a formal apology. This comes after Pope Francis refused to offer an apology for the Catholic Church's role in organizing much of the residential school system. In other words, and to put it bluntly, it was priests and nuns that delivered abuses to Indigenous children. This is no way a means of putting down the Catholic Church, because this is our history, the truth, and part of owning up to it is recognizing the truth. According to the CBC, the Catholic Church ran approximately 72% of residential schools. So why wouldn't the Catholic Church want to own up to its mistakes? Because the Catholic Church does not want to take the fall at the risk of bearing the full blame for residential schools. Residential schools is something we as Canadians don't really focus on because it's a given that it is a shameful part of our past. Think about it. If you can recall far back into high school history, we covered residential schools as, well, this is what we did and it was awful. But it's worse than we let on because the effects are intergenerational, meaning the effects of residential schools are felt for generations. An example of this is the abuses suffered by grandparents imprints on their children, and so therefore they are more likely to abuse their children, who abuse their children, and so on. Another example is due to the fact that residential schools taught Indigenous peoples that being Indigenous was bad, and has led some current generations of Indigenous people not to self-identify as Indigenous. Canada was also at fault in playing a hand in the residential school system. Canada has formally apologized under the leadership of Stephen Harper, who delivered a formal apology in the House of Commons on June 11, 2008. So the fact that the church did also play a large role in the residential school system and the Pope not owning up to it is a way of preventing the progress of reconciliation in Canada. reconciliation comes with recognizing and acknowledging all mistakes and harm done to Indigenous peoples in Canada. An apology would be of symbolic purposes because it would mean that the Church wants to commence reconciliation efforts. However, the absence of an apology demonstrates much progress is to be made to achieve reconciliation. It has been some time since I provided an update for the federal election polls, so here's an update. The Conservatives are still in the lead at 37.3%, followed by the Liberals securing second at 34.2%, the NDP is at 18.4%, the Green Party is a little under 6%, and the Bloc Québécois is at 3.2%. The Conservatives have gained the lead from the Liberals, with much dissatisfaction on Trudeau's performance. We've seen the media cover extensively Trudeau's failed India trip, and so this also plays into people are dissatisfied with Trudeau's performance. Ironically, we see this parallel with Canada and the US, in that there's been also a relatively decreased support for Donald Trump since he assumed office. So it simply means that people are increasingly less satisfied with government's performance. These polls also indicate the NDP is slowly gaining some ground in terms of support. Recall the NDP was previously holding the poll support around 17%, so they have gained a solid 1% within the past few weeks. Despite Jagmeet Singh's controversy with his attendance at a Psych Independence conference, these polls indicate Singh is still aspiring to make a comeback. Now, I'm impressed with the Green Party's support base federally at around 6%. Part of this is due to Canadians' confidence in the Green Party as a party that prioritizes environmental protection, that the party will keep its word in electing representatives into the House of Commons. The Green Party is more appealing and trustworthy, given Prime Minister Justin Trudeau was caught in a lie. Trudeau asserted that environmental protection was a priority, yet he supported the construction of the Keystone Pipeline. With the Kinder Morgan protests, Canadians saw and realized May will go out of her way in upholding environmental protection, and that to Canadians demonstrates dedication. With the Bloc, on the other hand, Canadians, mainly Quebecers, are confused with what direction the party is heading. First, a referendum on the party's direction and on the vote of confidence for its leader, Maxime Ouellette, was initially scheduled for the end of April, but now reports are indicating that this will be scheduled for June. The party's lack of stability is ultimately losing the confidence in its supporters. Ultimately, these polls are indicating Trudeau is going downhill, despite the confidence he had during the 2015 federal election with his sunny ways approach. I am not confident the Liberals will win the next federal election. Unless their next federal budget is a surplus, I am highly doubtful at this point in time. Trudeau has lost much support since assuming office, and this has generated a wide range of pessimism among the Canadian Liberal Party. That is your Politics in Action report. Thank you for listening. I hope to see you the next time. I am Emily with CJMQ 88.9 FM.